Welcome back to another episode of the Cosmic Circus newest podcast, Across the Queerverse. My name is Brian Kitson, head queer over at the Cosmic Circus and Cosmic Circus Broadway. And on today's episode, we're going to be opening the witch's door to the gayest show in the Marvel cinematic history, Agatha All Along. Joining me today are fellow cosmic queers, Uday Kataria, and Cam. What are we doing? How are we doing today, guys?
I'm ready to be gay, first of all. I'm happy to be here. We've been brainstorming this podcast for ages, like across the Queerverse and Agatha. So, it's a very exciting time over here for everyone involved.
I'm excited to talk Agatha. I feel like for so long we've been begging for like actual LGBT representation from the MCU, and it's like it took so long we just gave up on it, but like we actually have it now, and that's very exciting.
I mean, before we jump in, I want to go back. I like how Cam was just like, I'm ready to be gay. Like, we didn't come out of the womb like this, you know? We didn't just roll out of bed in the morning knowing that this was going to happen.
I actually freshly came out of the closet watching Agatha.
it's the Challengers bisexual opening again.
Yeah, if not more so.
So obviously, before we get started, spoiler alert, everybody, we're going to be talking about Agatha, which has just had its season finale, episodes 8 and 9 on Disney+. So if you haven't watched it all, you probably don't want to listen. But also, most gay people don't care about spoilers anyway. So like, except Uday. Sorry, Uday.
I mean, I've watched the whole show, but yeah, usually I'm not a spoiler person anymore. I want to be surprised.
Well, I hope that you were surprised by how gay this show is. So
I was impressed. I didn't think they'd go there. I'm like, yeah, like I thought it might be all talk and all hints just like in the run up to the show's release, but I was very pleasantly surprised.
I mean, they definitely were, at least in the promotion of the actors on tour, they were really playing it up. And I was like, okay, they're either playing this up because it's not happening, or they're playing it up because it is the gayest show ever.
Another Thor, Love and Thunder situation. I think that's what everyone was kind of worried about, basically, because obviously they tried saying that was like the gayest film, and then
yeah, because that's what they always do. They're like, oh, guys, like, there's going to be gay representation here. We did get the on-screen kiss in Eternals. That was nice.
Yeah.
Except,
and then like, that was it for 3 years.
And also, it was like that character and his husband didn't really matter. Like, they were barely in the movie, and they had that was like their only scene, like one of their two scenes together. So it was great. Like, it was better than nothing, for sure. It was better than what we get in Thor, Love, and Thunder. But Agatha, I feel like, is the first show that's made queer identities like such a fundamental part of the show without putting any like focus on it that would make it the target of hatred.
Right, because it was like a part of the story, but it wasn't the story.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing with, you know, Billy wasn't the fact that he was gay. It was the fact that he's the son of the Scarlet Witch, and it's just how happens to be gay, which was, you know, exciting.
So before we get into all of the queerness of it, I just want to get initial impressions of this season, because obviously we want to cover both aspects of here. You know, obviously we want to talk about what we came here for and what the listeners want, but we also got to talk about what the show is. So Uday, I'm gonna start with you, because I know you've written a review. I know it's coming out very soon. If it's not already out by the time this episode makes it, how are you feeling having seen all 9 episodes now? Because I know at first you were on the this is one of the greatest shows ever, and towards the end, maybe not so much.
So I'm really interested in all of the different reactions to the finale. Going into the finale off of episode 7, which is one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen. Like that episode just gets better and better as you rewatch it. And so I was like, Agatha's like a 9.5 out of 10. If they stick this landing, it's going to be crazy. And then I watched the finale and I was like, oh, they did not stick that landing. Like, they don't know what they're doing over there at Disney+ to like allow this kind of finale for such a good show. For me, like the last 2 episodes, they were decent. They were good. There was a lot that I liked about them, but then there was a lot that I really didn't like about them. And so they kind of dragged the show down from like a 9.5 out of 10 to like a 7 out of 10 for me. Mm-hmm. It's still, I would say, my second favorite Disney+ show after WandaVision. But exactly like WandaVision, like I saw the same pattern where it's like you have such a good build up, you have such good character arcs developing, and then it's like there's just too much to do in the finale. And so instead of even like trying to address it all, it's like Jack Schaefer just throws her hands up and she's like, I can't do it. It'll happen in another project. And I'm like, what?
So I don't know if I'm not allowed to say this, Lizzie will edit this out. But from what I understand, that what we got in the 9th episode was supposed to be the 10th episode that was going to drop on Halloween. It's supposed to be like a secret episode. And for some reason, it got kind of shoved together. Because like, as I was told a long time ago, that 10th episode was going to be Agatha talking about the road and how what led to the road and how the road was fake. And also, that was a big part of episode 9.
I got to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised to find that out, because WandaVision was also supposed to have 10 episodes and was only 9. And I feel like that's a big part of why its episode 9 feels so rushed. And I don't know what the reasoning is for these, but I was reading interviews with Jack Schaefer and she's like, Agatha was always intended to be 9. Like, I didn't need any more time with this show. Like, it was always going to be 9, just like WandaVision. But I'm like, it was rumored as a 10 episode series, like from the earliest, and then it became a 9 episode series. But like, I fully believe that there was more that was cut out.
I can in fact say with great certainty that there was a 10th episode that was written, and okay. That
so,
I mean, we had that a long time ago from different sources and different ideas, and I saw some of the proof of it, that there was 1 through 10. There was 10 of them. And all of a sudden it started to be 9. I was like, oops, something didn't make the cut here.
I feel like we need to run a class action lawsuit against Disney Plus for giving us half finished shows, because it's the same thing with Echo. Like, Echo was such a good show, and then its finale was just kind of like a mess. And yeah. So I still love the Echo show. I think it's way better than people give it credit for. But I will fully agree that finale was just like, oh, what the hell is going on here after 4 great episodes? And Echo was supposed to be 6 episodes. And then it's like 5 episodes and like the last 2 are 30 minutes long. And so it's like clearly something has gone wrong. And mm-hmm. I need Disney Plus to stop doing that. If you compare a Disney Plus show to something like The Penguin, not in terms of content, I'm just saying in terms of like show structure, it's like you can tell that one is like meticulously planned and like executed on that vision, and you can always tell that Disney Plus shows are compromising themselves in some way. And mm-hmm. Jack Schaefer, in her interviews, she's been saying like, oh, we hadn't figured this out by the time we started shooting. She said that what Billy says to Agatha in episode 8, like the mental, like what he says to her mentally, where he's like, is this how Nikki died? She said they didn't even decide what he was going to say to her until they were late in post-production. So they filmed that scene not knowing what he was going to say, and then inserted it probably through ADR in post. And that's why I respect James Gunn saying, I'm only going to shoot with completed scripts. Because when they were filming the show, Jack Schaefer hadn't even decided if the witches were going to stay dead. And I'm like, finish writing your shows before you start filming them, because you can see it in the finales.
Which, you know, and Cam, I'm going to get to you in 1 second about your thoughts, I promise. But from what I had been told before from other people was that the witches were coming back for like that was like the rumor for such a long time. And then as we got closer, they're like, no, most of these witches are staying dead. And I'm just like, what happened? And that makes sense that the show, it reminds me a lot of like video games that come out and like the game's not complete, but we're just putting it out. And then we'll like send patches and we'll do DLCs and like, you'll get the whole story after you. And I feel like this is what's happening with shows now, especially on Disney Plus, is like everybody's trying to rush out that material because they need the something to draw them in, and then it's just missing. Like, there's pieces that are just not there.
And sorry, Cam. The crazy thing is just that Agatha doesn't seem like it was rushed out, because it was originally said it might even debut in late 2023, mm-hmm. and then it debuts in like quarter 3 of 2024. So like, that's almost a year after its like original rumored release window. And so I'm like, it feels like they took their time. And I feel like you can tell that in the look of the show. Like, the show looks excellent. It looks much better than the rest of what's on Disney Plus, mm-hmm. even though it's the cheapest. And I'm just wondering, like, what's wrong at Marvel Studios that, like, this keeps happening to their stories? Like, finish writing them before you start filming them.
Absolutely fair. Cam, I want to give you the floor now. Tell me your thoughts of Agatha.
Well, on the flip side, I did enjoy the ending for what it's worth. Because obviously I've sort of been covering the show for quite a while, because like I've got like a bit of a Agatha news account that's got a few thousand followers, not to brag or anything, but so I had like...
Wait, what account?
It's Agatha H News. I run that one.
I didn't know this.
That just changes everything. We have a celebrity in our midst.
But I do totally get, because obviously I've been reading like loads and loads of interviews, and like there is obviously bits that she like wanted to do, and like but as a finale, like I really enjoyed the two parts together. I think if you watch it sort of back to back, as like most people did, it works a lot better, because you've got the whole, like, imagine waiting a week after episode 8. I think that would have probably dragged it down for a lot of people if, you know, episode 9 had actually been the last episode. But I really enjoyed what they did with the flashbacks. Obviously, a lot of people wanted them to go even further back and like show how Rio and Agatha met, which, you know, is would have been nice to see. But I feel like for Agatha, it has been about her and Nikki, and like Nick, her son. I think that's been the running theme through the show. So it's good that they chose that bit to show, and how her son basically created the road, and then it ends up being the Scarlet Witch's son that actually creates the road for the witches. I really enjoyed what they did with Jennifer at the end, you know, that unbinding scene, her getting her powers back, all of that kind of thing. So it'd be nice to see if she crops up again. I thought they sort of did good with sort of remembering. I mean, it is weird that they kind of close the road and there's like a memorial to the witches in the bottom of Agatha's house, and then Agatha and Billy leave her house, and then who's going to live in it? There's just going to be like three random names at the bottom of a basement. But I enjoyed that for what it's worth. I thought the whole sort of Billy is like full-on Wiccan, that was done quite well. I mean, it's a bit like underwhelming just because he floats down from the middle of nowhere into the back of a garden, but I think because it was like a bit of a low budget show, I understand that, you know, they weren't going to have all of that kind of thing. And I think Agatha becoming a ghost at the end was also like a good thing for her to become, sort of like now she's trapped as a ghost basically, because obviously in the comics she, most of her comics appearances, she is a ghost. Like, she's been dead for ages. She loves to like haunt Wanda and everything and all that kind of thing. So I think it'll be exciting to see where it goes. But I did enjoy the finale. But obviously I do understand the negative aspects, as Uday has said. But I really enjoyed it.
I think that I went into the show with both the highest and lowest expectations of what to expect, that I was just pleasantly surprised. I am in the camp with you, Cam. I actually did like the finale. I do think that there were some issues, obviously. I need them to stop giving our stars their costumes in the last 5 minutes,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then having them walk away. Like, I needed more of Billy in his costume. Yeah. And
I did enjoy the transformation, though,
interesting that people are saying that, though, because I'm like, Who even thought we would get Billy in his costume in this show? Like, when the rumors started, I'm like, Jack Schaefer's giving you the costume in Billy's first appearance, not making you wait 6 years and 5 movies and a TV show. And so I saw people tweeting about that, about how like Marvel's never beating the costume in the last episode allegations. And I'm like, but sometimes it works. And for Billy, like, I honestly feel like it was too soon. I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, you just like you can't control your power, but all of a sudden you got like a cool outfit and like a crown and everything. So like everyone talks about earning the costumes. I'm like, Billy didn't earn his costume. He needed a movie, like another movie before he
just
get
wanted
it.
His big gay moment.
But that's, I'm happy. It. I love the costume. I'm super happy with it. But I just my big, it's so interesting to me.
My biggest thing about the costume is just that it's gonna change now the next time we see him. And that was like, it's like the the costume he has is so perfect. I don't want them to pull the Kamala Khan where her costume is so different in the next film, and you're just like, please give it back to me.
But they have to sell toys.
I know, but like, Wanda's costume at the end of WandaVision is perfect, and then all of a sudden she's evil and it's different, and it's just like, oh, but I wanted more than just 5 seconds of that costume, you know?
Yeah, see, I totally agree with that. To be fair, with Wanda's costume, I think that's very clearly the difference in the writers, because Jack Schaefer ended WandaVision giving her an Avengers type hero costume, and then Michael Waldron took that concept and turned it Evil Witch. And so I actually find it fascinating how, like, you can just see like how the writers think of her differently in how the costumes were so different, mm-hmm. but based on the same thing. But yeah, I do think that's a problem, because Kamala Khan is a great example. That's the best costume in the MCU, her Ms. Marvel costume. And mm-hmm. what she had in the Marvels was like, okay, but like, can we have,
it wasn't the same.
No, and it was too much. It was like,
right.
I'm like, can you just let this girl have her costume? Like, mm-hmm. why couldn't she have worn the other one for 5 seconds? And then you sell all the toys based off of that.
Right. Or just keep selling the same toys and putting in new packaging. We've done that before. G.I. Joes and Transformers.
Yeah, why don't you pair the same Ms. Marvel figure with the new Captain Marvel yeah. figure? Right? Make a bundle.
I was going to say, exactly. At least it's not Captain Marvel, who had a different costume for every post-credit scene she was in. So it could be worse.
Yeah, they did her dirty. Or if you look at Wanda.
Haircut.
Wanda had a different costume for every movie she was in.
Yeah.
That I mean, the three of those were just a variation on the same trench.
Yeah.
I know. It was like slightly darker, a little bit lighter.
Yeah, I was like, she went from like the corset to like wearing like, no, wasn't she wearing the corset the entire? God, Wanda's costume in Endgame. Like, I saw the scene of her like defeating Thanos again the other day, and I was like, we've come so far, and I'm so glad, because like, what is this shit? Like, you should be wearing her crown.
She should. And I can't wait for her to come back and have that crown again. But it better be that costume from WandaVision, or I'm revolting.
No, it's going to be a different costume, but like, yeah. I'm ready, you know? In 2045, we'll all be sitting in theaters for the Scarlet Witch movie.
So, you know, I want to talk about what stood out about the show, and I want to start this one because something that, Uday, you said, and I just have to go back to it. Episode 7 of this show will be hands down maybe my favorite television, like my favorite thing in Marvel ever. That tarot card episode has to be, I mean, like, it's so simple, yet it's so good. Like, I just cannot praise that episode enough. And I'm so glad you mentioned that you liked that episode. But what about that episode did you approve? Like, did you like?
I liked a lot of it, because so the first time watching it, when it started, I was kind of frustrated because, like, you know, we're following Lilia and Jen walking through the tunnels, and, you know, they're talking about stuff that Lilia told her. And I was immediately annoyed. I'm like, why didn't we see this? Like, why are we being told it? You know, I say in my Agatha finale review, I'm like, show, don't tell. And that's a huge problem the MCU has had, like, since Infinity War, in my opinion. That's a lot of why I don't like Infinity War. It's so much telling and not showing. And so I was like, you need to show us that. Like, you can't just tell us that. But I didn't understand what they were doing. So then, you know, you progress through the episode and you're jumping around in time. And so then you are seeing what Lilia and Jen were talking about. You're just seeing it with Lilia's perspective. And so I really liked that. And so I felt like the episode was kind of weird because it's really hard to follow Lilia's life. You know, it's hard to jump around in time like that, and I think that that's genius because it's hard to follow for you as a viewer, and it also puts you in her shoes, and it's like, damn, her life must be really hard if this is how she's living the whole time and I can't handle it for 30 minutes. But then by the end of the episode, like, everything like comes together so perfectly, and like the tarot card reading sequence is just so powerful and really moving. And so I really like that trial, because you can tell in episode 7 and 8, like, the trials don't matter as much. Like, they're really rushing through them, but they don't feel like cheap to me. Like, I know people didn't like the trial in episode 5 either, and I was like, yeah, that trial was very quick, but I don't think it felt too rushed because of like what it did for the characters. And so you're like moving at a breakneck pace through the trial in episode 7, and then you're intercutting that with like Lilia jumping around in time and like, you know, centuries back and just like 10 minutes back. And I just thought it was really well done because of how it all came together at the end. And then when you rewatch the episode, it gets even better because now that you understand what's going on, like, now you can follow as a viewer, like, the linear progression better. And that's also what's happening to Lilia. It's like, when she dies, she's at peace and she goes back to like her first lesson with her maestra. And now she's happy because she knows how it ends. Like, there's no surprises anymore. Like, now she can live her life in peace because she's seen it all and she's not jumping around like with the uncertainty of it anymore. And so like that show's just so rewarding, like, or that episode is just so rewarding every time you watch it. I watched it like 6 times in 1 week.
I mean, understandable. So, and also I just want to point out too that the swords are actually a practical effect and they had to choreograph.
Insane. I was reading that in an interview and they were like, oh, we have the best actors. Like they were totally willing to not explore that set because we told them if they stepped in the wrong place, they'd get impaled. And I'm like, how is that legal?
Yeah, they said they had to choreograph it down to like the second and everybody had to know it by heart and practice it before they went on set.
Sorry, if I was an actor... Like, a lot of people tweet, like, oh, I could never be an actor because you have to, like, kiss your hot co-stars. And, like, they're like, I would fall in love. But, like, I could not be an actor because the second I walk on set with real swords hanging from the ceiling, I'd be like, bye, guys. You have millions of dollars. Make this CGI.
I 100% told my mom, I was just like, if I stepped on that set, I would die. There is no way. I would, they'd be, like, step to the left and I don't know my directions and I'd step the wrong way and I would be impaled and that'd be it. That'd be fun. Like, and we're done at that point.
Also, your intrusive thoughts might win you. You might be like, yeah, let me poke around the set. Like, let me actually trigger a sword falling, like just for fun. Like, I'd be willing to take the risk.
That would be me. I'm far too nosy, so I just want to look around the whole place and be like, what's through here? And then next thing you know, you've got no leg and you're in hospital. But
Cam, what did you like? What stood out to you about the show? Is there anything specific?
Obviously Patti LuPone, but I think like we've talked about her, she was like, if you, when you've got a show with Patti LuPone in, like, I mean, from when she was cast in the show and she was spoiling her character in interviews like 2 years ago, you knew you were in for something good. just all that, like she was telling who was who, like what they go on a road and all of this, and it's like, what the hell. But also for me, I really enjoyed episode 3. I think that is my standout episode, with the whole just the wine, just witches drinking wine and then like they have to go and make a potion. I'm just like, what's not to love there? Like they get really nice like white suburban mom costumes, like all of that kind of thing. Like it was just, and then obviously you've got Sharon in there, like Deborah Jo Rupp, like she is just, I'm so glad they brought back like all of the WandaVision like extras. That's another highlight for me, like just to like really interconnect the whole thing. Like even though a lot of them didn't get anything to do, I just think having Deborah Jo Rupp back was something special there. So I really enjoyed that. And obviously, I mean, just the whole cast in general, like, I mean, it's, you know, several women and then a gay man, like you never get that in a TV show. Like I can't name a single other one where it's that kind of a level of cast. So I just, yeah. Basically just the cast stand out and then episode 3 and obviously 7 as well for me.
I think that's a good point. I didn't really like it crossed my mind, but I don't think I really thought about it. Like this is was it could have been a huge gamble. Women, queer women, you have women of color, like there is a lot that could have gone wrong. Like, or I feel like there, I at least maybe I haven't, I've been staying off of Twitter, I haven't seen as much hate for the show as I was expecting.
I think there was at the start, but that's just because it's people hating things before it comes out. But
sure,
I also think the Star Wars fandom has a unique toxicity to it, and so I hate what happened to the Acolyte, but it's also not totally surprising to see that from Star Wars. The only thing I feel like I've seen the Marvel fandom like really hate on is like the Marvels, but again, was that coming from within the fandom or from outside? And I guess She-Hulk.
Secret Invasion, but that's because it, you know, was, well, genuinely
I mean hating yeah, because of the people on the poster, okay, not okay, hating because it's bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Secret Invasion deserves every piece of shit lobbed at it. Yeah. Secret Invasion should be burned from everyone's memory.
I do think that with Agatha, I saw a lot of a little bit more than skepticism leading up to the show. A lot of people being like, this is not going to be good.
But again, like I respect that because they were saying, oh, it's not going to be good because of Agatha. It's not going to be good because they're making a whole show based off of one song. And you know what? If I was a hater, I would be saying the same thing. So I'm like, more power to you. you know, I didn't think that the show would get this much attention, to be honest. I didn't, like, the viewership doesn't seem to be that high based on the Nielsen ratings, but like it's certainly high enough for a show that costs less than $40 million. Like it's doing about where the Acolyte did, but it cost like four times less to make. So I think that it's a success. And that's what we've been saying. Like, not everyone needs to watch every single MCU thing. But when you're giving a TV show a $215 million budget, Secret Invasion, like, then you do need to have it be like the most watched thing on Disney Plus in order to be successful. And so I think that, like, Agatha being cheaper and having lower viewership is totally fine. It's still a success for, like, the investment that they put into it, at least in my opinion. And it looks like it, especially with how much the views have been going up in the last three episodes. So,
as I say, I read that this was, they're considering this the most successful Disney Plus show because the budget was so low, but the viewership was high enough to justify it. Like,
yeah. And Brad Winterbaum, he said that after episode one, he said it has the most retention of any Disney Plus show. Like, after, because both episodes premiered on the same day. So I guess after episode one, like, the most people hit play on episode two of any Disney Plus show. And that's very interesting to me. Because I also saw the numbers for the finale episodes. And episode eight was 4.6 million. And then episode nine was 3.9 million. And I'm like, it's fascinating to me that 700,000 viewers dropped off between those two episodes. Because I thought episode eight ended really strongly with the twist.
Yeah.
And so I found that very interesting. But I mean, I was talking to my coworker and he was like, I only had time to watch episode eight. Like, I had Halloween stuff to prepare for. So I feel like that could have also factored into it.
Do you think that, like, with this having such a low, like, it sounds a crazy thing, $40 million is such a low budget, but, like, with it having such a low budget compared to some of the other ones, did it feel cheap? And Cam, I'm gonna start with you. No?
Absolutely not. No, I think if anything, I felt it made it more realistic, because obviously they did a lot of practical effects, like, obviously with the swords and everything. And I feel like there's other things, like whenever they were flying, that was all, like, practical and that kind of thing. But no, I felt like it was actually probably, like, it looked, I mean, not to, well, yeah, to bash on Secret Invasion again, but it actually looked like it was, like, obviously the Witch's Road itself is, like, one of the most beautiful sort of places, like, they've done recently, like, all of that kind of thing. Like, even Westview looked sort of quite high-end, you know, like, even if it's just a couple of streets, it's, like, filmed as if it's, like, some multi-million, $100 million film, that kind of thing. But I thought it was really good. And then obviously they did use the CGI sparingly enough that it worked and they could put the money into those bits. So, like, any powers that were shown, that kind of thing and all of that. But I did not think it looked cheap in, like, any scene at all. No, I can't think of anything.
Yeah. Okay. Uday, how about you?
Okay, yeah. So I want to clarify that I'm not a hater, that, like, I do love Agatha and I do love Jack Schaefer's work. I just have a problem with her finales. Because I do think it looked cheap at certain points. I agree with Cam for the most part. Like, The Witch's Road looked excellent. I really love how hard they went in on doing everything practically. And I also really agree with what he said about Westview. I was thinking about that, like, in episode two in particular, the way that Westview was shot, like, just, like, with the angles of the sun and everything, you know, like, when Agatha's coming out of her house to show off her costume, or even when she's just walking up to Mrs. Hart to, like, you know, try to kill her. It was like, the way it's shot is just very cinematic. It's shot very well. And then something like Secret Invasion can, you know, make everything look like crap. And Agatha makes everything look good. And again, not to bash on Secret Invasion so much, but when you're the worst show, that's what you get. And The Witch's Road looked excellent. The scene where they were flying, I feel like that could have looked like crap, and it didn't. And I really respect them for it. I'm fascinated they did so many things practically, like, from the, like, swollen faces in episode three to, like, even the makeup for Death. But the magic looked cheap as frick. Like, compare the magic, the way the magic looks in Agatha, to the way the magic looks in WandaVision, and it really feels like they didn't finish rendering it out, especially, like, in episode nine and in episode eight. Like, that's, to me, like, when you really started feeling the low budget, because it just doesn't look as good as it did in the past. Episode eight, I don't think, is as much of a problem. I think it looked pretty decent in episode eight. But yeah, like, in episode nine, like, when she was taking all the other witches' power and, like, doing, like, the ballad through the centuries and everything, I'm like, guys, why does the magic look so awful compared to the same scenes in WandaVision? Like, WandaVision peaked in terms of CGI magic for the MCU. Like, that's when it looked its best, when it had those like black lines flowing through it and it looked like powerful and real. And in Agatha, it looks kind of watery and like weak.
So I actually, in my head, I had an explanation for that. And I didn't question that, because in my head, she does not have the Darkhold yet, nor does she have all their powers. She's like taking their powers. And so like they're weak witches who don't have like loads and loads of powers, and she hasn't accrued it all yet throughout the years. And I went back and watched it a third time, because I watched the finale the third time. It does get thicker with each time, but it's not like significant enough that you like, that's like not to where she is when she's in Westview. So I did not mind that. I'm just saying.
Okay, I can totally see that, because I was also thinking about that. I'm like, also, to be fair, like most of the coven stealing scenes are in daylight, and we really only saw magic even in daylight in WandaVision. It wasn't like out in the sun, you know, like it was still like, and so I'm like, maybe that had something to do with it, like the effect of like sunlight on the magic. I also like, you know, the other witches are just less powerful, but I was comparing it to her stealing her own coven's power in WandaVision and how their magic, and again, maybe the Salemites were more powerful than like these random witches that she's stealing from, but I just feel like the magic effect in the MCU has been on a steady decline since it peaked in WandaVision. Like even in Multiverse of Madness, Wanda's magic had that same watery look that it did in like Endgame, even though her magic got a huge upgrade visually in WandaVision. And so it's just like, I need more consistency, please. I need it. Can't it just look good all the time?
Speaking of consistency, let's talk about that scene from WandaVision. And I promise we're getting to the gay stuff. But like the scene in WandaVision where she's stealing the power from the Salem Knights, compared to the story that we find out in the end of the episode, where like in the episode of WandaVision, they make it seem like she's already this villain. And then we find out that like that story is not quite true. And what do we think about the consistency? Because like she was stealing the power of her family. Where does that fall compared to losing Nicholas? Because again, it just feels like there was something off about that timeline a little bit.
I feel like, obviously, in WandaVision, like I've not seen WandaVision in a while, but from what I can remember, it feels like they were trying to kill Agatha with the powers, like because her mother sentenced her to death, basically. So I imagine that might have been like one of the first times she absorbed powers, and like obviously she didn't like stop them, because you know, you find out in episode 8 that she can stop people, you know, dying from when she absorbs her powers, because she lets Billy live. So I think the only thing for me with the flashbacks in like Agatha and Wanda is, I think there should have just been, well, maybe not like a lot more, but I think they could have filled out the story a bit more in like, would have been really nice to know how she first meets Rio. It would have been nice. I mean, I think the thing with the Darkhold in Agatha, I know there was like a lot of rumors at the time that they wanted something, you know, Kang, something to do with that. Like he wrote the Darkhold or something. Like, I don't know if that was ever going to be true, or but that was one of the rumors floating around. So I can understand if they like ended up not bothering talking about the Darkhold in Agatha all along much, or showing how Agatha actually comes across it and gets it. But I think it might be nice in the future to maybe try and fill in those gaps a bit more. But I do think, because obviously in episode 5 we see Agatha's mom, and like that fills in more story there about sort of her, what she's like in, what she's like as a mother basically. And obviously, you know, you feel for Agatha because she doesn't sound very nice. So but yeah, I would say there was probably consistency between, because obviously, you know, Agatha is a horrible, horrible woman. Like, you have to remember that when you're watching the show, like, and so it can't surprise you about anything that she does. But yeah, I think that's what it'd be for me. It's just there should have been a little bit more of her story interspersed.
Sure. Uday?
I've been waiting years to talk about this. After WandaVision, I loved Agatha, but I had an article idea that I never ended up writing, or I wrote like half of it and I don't know what happened to it, but it was about like how Hela and Agatha are basically the same character. Like, they're amazing villains with great outfits and cool magic played by middle-aged white women that gay people love, and they both have no backstory, no characterization other than like, oh, I'm super evil and like I have a bad parent. And so like, that was really interesting to me, and I never ended up writing that article, and then like this show's coming out, and so like it's too late now. I was like, now she's gonna get backstory, and I'm like, I can still write it. She doesn't have the backstory. Like when her pair or when her mother and her coven were trying to kill her in WandaVision, I was like, oh, like did she steal the Darkhold already? Like executing an 18-year-old witch, like because she's like practicing super dark magic. I'm like, what does that mean? And part of why I don't like the finale is I am baffled that we have somehow made it through a 9-episode show about Agatha and still have no idea why she is the way she is. Like, I'm not saying that it needs to be like the focus of the show. Like, we all know Agatha's a terrible person. We also know that she's had some rough stuff in her life, you know, from her mother trying to kill her to her lover taking her son into the afterlife. But you don't know why she's evil. And to me, that's kind of inexcusable in a 9-episode show about her to not make the time to flesh out her backstory at all besides like Nicholas. It's just really unforgivable to me. And Jack Schaefer is saying in interviews, you know, like Cam is saying, like, we can find out in the future. And Jack Schaefer is like, Agatha and Rio's like first meeting is a story for another time. And I'm like, no, it's not. This is the time. What are you going to do? Take time out of like Billy's show to tell us about Agatha and Rio? I don't want that. I don't want to find this stuff out years from now in another project. Like the time is now. It would have added more context to the emotional stakes of this show now. And so it's just really frustrating to me that there's so much that's saved for the future when that future might never come. And that's something that I feel like the MCU has gotten really bad at in phase 4 specifically. I feel like that's why phases like 4 and 5 are much weaker than the other two, is because now they're just throwing stuff at the wall and being like, we might pick it up eventually. And I'm like, I don't want you to introduce it if you're not going to pick it up. So
I think the Marvels proved that pretty well too, of like, we're not going to get a Captain Marvel 3, but you've introduced all the stuff that like you could have introduced in Captain Marvel 3 because the movie didn't do well. And like, what if Agatha didn't do well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And my thing is like, I think Agatha is doing well. I think we're going to see more of her. My thing is just, I don't see why you would tell Agatha and Rio's story in the future when we needed it now. Like, I still want it, but right. I needed it in this show because, I mean, I know we're going to get into the relationship, so I'll leave it there. But like her mother, like Agatha's mother was like, you were born evil. I'm like, am I supposed to believe her? Because I didn't believe her in episode 5, but we're given no reason to believe the contrary. We don't know what she was doing in like in Salem that made her be viewed as so evil. And when WandaVision came out, I like believed that Agatha was wronged because like she acted like she was wronged. And so I was like, maybe you were wronged. Like maybe you just were ambitious and they didn't respect that ambition. But now I think it's very clear, like, no, you're just evil. And that's fine. But I want to know why. Like, there's a reason why you're evil. Is the reason that you were born evil? Because that seems very lazy to me. I think it's so much more interesting if she has an ambition for power and she was doing stuff like reading the Darkhold behind her coven's back, but she clearly wasn't because she doesn't even have it by like the 1980s. So,
no, I think that's totally fair. And, you know, I do want to jump now into the gay storyline because this is an integral part. And I think that you're right that while we did get some really great representation, specifically with Agatha and Rio, there was a lack of a story of how they met and where they came from that I think made the emotional punch of death taking it just like it's there, but it could have been better if we would have known like where they began.
Exactly.
It still like, hurts.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was bad for sure. I think it was good. Like I'm not even saying it's just okay. Like it was good, but like it really feels like it could have been great. And so it's super frustrating. I think it would be such an interesting idea if Agatha was already in love with death, like when her coven was trying to kill her. Like, sure. You know how serial killers like start with like torturing small animals? I'm like, what if Agatha was doing that in Salem? And like, that's how she met death.
Okay. I smell a fanfic happening here.
And then her mother wanted to kill her because she's like, you're like killing living creatures like just so that you can like make out with your girlfriend or something. And so she's like, that's messed up. You should die.
That would make a lot of sense. Cam, I want to ask you, there's two like major queer like relationships in this one. One is Billy and his boyfriend, which gets like half an episode and it isn't that important. And then it's Agatha and Rhea, which is carries throughout. What are your kind of impressions of the queerness of these two relationships for the MCU?
Well, I feel like obviously it's really important that like a whole show is sort of dedicated to queerness. I think that's sort of an important, like obviously like with Billy and his boyfriend, like even though it was half an episode, it did seem, you know, it still was really sweet, and like you are introduced to it in episode two when, you know, his boyfriend's trying to get in contact with him and stuff. But it was really nice to see, and like it's just nice to see like a, you know, sort of a healthy like gay relationship, you know, when there's so many that aren't like on TV and all of that. So I did enjoy that, and obviously like they are like two teenagers, like it's, you know, as much as I love Heartstopper, well, I've only seen season one, but you know, like Heartstopper is like a different way to the teenagers in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. Like they're always going to be slightly different. So I enjoyed like it was just more of a sort of, oh, they're a little bit, you know, horny for each other, basically, that kind of thing. And then obviously on the flip side, we've got Agatha and Rhea, which is sort of the whole show is dedicated to them. Like, I mean, in the first two episodes, you've got that like really overly sexual fight to not the death, but obviously, you know, there's all of the connotations that they want to kill each other. And like death, you know, is like once a horizontal in, you know, in a grave, right, or whatever, which she does get at the end of the show, you know.
I've never wanted somebody to hold a knife to my neck so bad.
Exactly. Like she, like they make an impression that they are like exes, like very from the start. And then obviously as it goes on, like you get that near kiss at the end of episode four. And then it sort of just gets, you know, gayer and gayer. And like, obviously I do agree with you and you, Day, like it would have been really nice to see where they started off. Like in interviews, she has said that they did, that like she's thought about it and stuff, but she just didn't do it because she wanted to focus on Agatha and Nikki. And I'm like, well, could have had a little bit of it. But I just think it was really important for Marvel to dedicate like a whole sort of like queerness to a main character. In the way that they did, like she, like Agatha has got no problem with saying like she's not straight, like, you know, she doesn't have to hide it. It's not about coming out like in the show. Like this, you know, Billy makes plenty of gay jokes throughout the show, like, you know, they're actually genuinely funny instead of being like forced and being like, oh look, we've got gay characters, please watch this show. Like they're just so natural about it, which makes a change from other films that are, you know, get really obsessed with saying they're gay and then it's like the most tame thing in existence. But
sure.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I about Billy and his boyfriend, the thing I liked about it is that it just kind of normalized that this could just be around and happening, and like it's not a big deal. It's like, again, I think we see that in some of the newer, younger queer media. It's just like, it doesn't have to be like, you're not having to come out. It just is like you kiss and it's normal. And that's like really cool. As like, I got called an elder gay the other day, which both hurt and is true probably. But I was like, you know, you don't get to see that all the time. I didn't grow up in a world where there was just two men kissing in school, you know? And so to see that there was like this 16-year-old that is just living a life with a boyfriend that has been established for a while. And his parents didn't even, you know, the Kaplans didn't even blink an eye. And then you have that little bit of that like traumatic experience with Agatha and Rhea for a different reason. But it's also like, yeah, I'm not dating death, but I also know the trauma that it can be of dating somebody you're not supposed to. And like what comes with that. And like that the pull, the to and from, the back and forth with somebody, like the scene where they're in, I think it's episode four, when they're like leaning in the record room. And it's just like, there's that sexual tension. And I was like, there's not a single gay man in the late 20s, early 30s, who hasn't had that situation with somebody that's just, you're feeling it and you're just like, oh, I'm not a witch and I'm not on the witch's road, but that's also who that's representative of me and my life. And so I did like that. I like that we got to see like an established relationship with somebody young and how they just get to kind of have love, even though it's not Hulkling, but we'll take what we can get. And then having someone like Agatha and Rhea. Uday, what are your thoughts on these two? Like, they're very different relationships.
I agree with what you guys have said. Like, it was, it's very natural. And there's that line from Agatha about, like, oh, if you want straight answers, ask a straight lady. Yes. I feel like if that was in episode one or episode two, it would have felt disingenuous. But yeah, by episode, what was that, seven? Yeah, yeah, start of seven. Episode seven. It was very natural because she was very obviously gay. Like, they start hinting at it. And I remember going back to when Wanda trapped her in the spell at the end of WandaVision, and she was like, oh, like, did I leave the oven on, or is that just you hot stuff? And people were like, oh my God, like, Agatha has the hots for Wanda. And it's really funny that she did, like, she did have
the hots for Wanda. You know, she does say that, you know, she was like her ex and then takes her best friend. Like, that was a really good part.
I have something to say about that, like, slight, like, because everyone latched onto that thing. They were like, oh, like, she was saying that she's her mom's ex. I'm like, no, she was saying she's her mom's best friend, and then she added in the ex because they had such a bad, like, falling out. Like, the cadence of that sentence is like, I was your mom's best friend is all said in the same cadence, and ex is just added in there mockingly. Mm-hmm. It's not like I was your mom's ex and then, like, best friend is added in there mockingly, you know? Like, she was saying she was her mom's best friend, not she was her mom's ex-girlfriend. And everyone was saying it the other way around. And I'm like, that's not how intonation works when you're speaking. So sorry. But it was just, yeah, I was thinking about this, like, last night. But yeah, no, she definitely had the hots for Wanda. And I, like, and I really appreciate how just, like, they built that up through, like, these really subtle moments where, again, it's like you could very clearly see that they're exes. I guess some people, like, might not, but from, like, the my black heart beats for you to, like, the licking your hand to heal it, I'm like, it was built up very naturally. And then, yeah, when she goes in for the kiss in episode four, it's very natural. It's very intimate, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And, like, you can, and that's a testament to the performances from the actresses, because I don't feel like they were given a ton to work with. They were obviously given enough to work with. But obviously, when you have Aubrey Plaza and Catherine Hahn doing it, like, they really elevate it. And you can, like, really feel, like, the history there. I'll come back to them. But for Billy and his boyfriend, again, supernatural. I really liked the scene of them in the car. Like, you know, it's just two teenagers coming back from, like, hanging out. It felt very wholesome. And I don't watch Heartstopper, so, like, I don't know how it compares to something like that. But it was super nice to see. And I also love that his boyfriend was so supportive of him, even though he seemed like he was off his rocker. And yeah, and I know they said in an interview that it was super important for the parents to, for it to be normalized, for there to be, like, no coming out or, like, no awkwardness or anything. And it's just, like, he's, like, been accepted into their family. And so I also really liked that, even though it was just that one short scene, you know, like, they were upset that he didn't bring, or not upset, but they were, like, sad he didn't bring the boyfriend in to, like, hang out with them, you know?
It was, like, very, it's just, like, very, it's heartwarming. I'm just being like, oh, that's what young love can be for anybody of any, you know, like, no matter, love is love, you know, like, literally the cliche saying.
Yeah, exactly. And then going back to Agatha and Rio, so my problem with them is that, like, they're painting it as a toxic relationship, right? And to me, it didn't feel that toxic until episode eight. Like, I see that it was toxic, but, like, really until episode eight, it felt more fun and flirty, like they're hating each other and not, like, like, yeah, there was genuine hate there, but you know what I mean? Like, Agatha was still going to her for comfort. She was still, like, stealing those glances, trying to kiss her, and Rio is, like, crazy and psycho, but, like, didn't seem, like, completely off her rocker. Like, I wrote this in my review, but I'm like, it really seems like they were two insane, terrible people who matched each other's freak. And so it worked.
100%.
And then in episode eight, Rio just takes such a left turn into being, like, a psycho, insane ex. And she's like, why don't you want me? And, like, I'm going to kill you. And, like, I'm just like, where is this coming from? Like, you've been a crazy but, like, still, like, relatively reasonable person, even, like, in your conversations at the beginning of episode eight. And then as soon as, like, it's time for the final battle, like, your personality totally switches up into, like, yeah, it's like that whole thing of, like, why don't you want to be with me? Oh, like, you think I'm evil. And I'm just like, yeah, why are you surprised she doesn't want to be with you? Like, you killed her son and she's hated you for centuries. Like, it's very clear that she doesn't want to be with you. Like, And so for her to be so irrationally, like, toxically mad about it, it felt like a total left turn from how she was in the entire show before this, because she was reasonably mad about it before. And so that didn't work for me. And so that's why I'm so upset about not seeing any of their relationship, because I'm like, maybe this would have worked if you showed them in love. If you showed what it was like when they were partners, when they, like, had a relationship, and maybe if you showed that it was toxic back then, because I think, like, I really like the idea, like, I don't think Rio ever lived with Agatha. I feel like their relationship only happened when Agatha killed people, right? And yeah. So, like, the idea that, like, you need to kill someone in order to be able to, like, kiss your ex, you know? Like, the idea that, like, you can only be with her, like, the worse you get and the more bad things you do, like, that's when you can, like, be with the person that loves you. That would have been really interesting to see. Mm-hmm. It also would have been really interesting to see, like, a codependency develop, because, you know, it would have offered so much more context, and it would have made it feel like a true toxic relationship for the entire centuries that they've known each other. And also, there's that concept that Jack Shaver has said of, like, Agatha having death whipped, like, death is the bottom, like, death is always in control except when she's with Agatha, and Agatha has complete control over her in their relationship. And sure, I see hints of that, but again, it doesn't land for me, because you don't see their relationship. You see what broke them up. You see the fallout resulting from that. And you see, like, the fatal end of their relationship with Agatha's death. Mm-hmm. But because you never saw them at their best, or even heard about it, like, again, show, don't tell. I would have taken tell. Tell is better than nothing. And so if we at least heard of how they met, but... yeah, so that's why, like, the finale, like, feels super rushed, and totally, like, the final battle part of episode 8 doesn't really work for me. It's because it's good, but I'm just like, it's good in a vacuum. It's like, it doesn't have the emotional punch that it needs for me.
So one of my friends pointed out, and then I have 2 points, but I'm going to talk about what my friend sent me real quick. So this is verbatim a text yesterday. Oh my God, stop. I just saw someone use the WandaVision quote of "what is grief if not love persevering" on a post, saying that the death kiss was Agatha forgiving Rio and dying, kissing the woman she loved, which I thought was a really good point until we started talking about it. We broke it down a little bit. In the episode where Billy's investigating Agatha, on one of the pages, it talks about the fact that she has a succubus power. And so in the end, that kiss was not her dying at the hands of death, but it was her forgiving death and welcoming death into her life, which is more of the poetic story that those two characters deserved, if they had more of that intro part too. But it was literally her being like, I forgive you and I'm dying on my own terms. And so I think that is beautiful, but there's no explanation about that other than if you knew to look at the Wikipedia page of Billy.
So I kind of reject that interpretation personally, because Agatha comes back as a ghost. Because she doesn't want to be with Rio. Like,
no, she doesn't want to be. It's not that she doesn't want to be with Rio. She doesn't want to face her son because of what she did. She even says that she can't face him.
But I also think that it's because of Rio. So, like, yes, the central relationship is definitely, like, Agatha and Nikki and Agatha and Billy. But Agatha and Rio is, like, almost of, like, equal importance to that. Like, to me, like, in terms of the show, and especially being that the final battle is between them and all this. And yeah, I know that she doesn't want to face Nikki, but she's also deliberately staying out of Rio's, like, toxic embrace, as Billy calls it. Like, Rio said she hates ghosts, and I know it's not explained, but, like, she's death. She probably hates ghosts because they don't just want to cross over and, like, come to her domain. It's like they don't want to live, but they don't want to be fully dead. And so it probably pisses her off to no end, because she's like, you know, like, pick a lane, make up your mind. Like, don't just exist 100%. in limbo. And so Agatha is, like, what Rio hates now. Like, and I saw people point out, like, so this is just going to continue their toxic relationship, because Rio now got what she wanted, which was Agatha dead, but Agatha still refuses to be with her. It's like they're still playing cat and mouse. Agatha's like, you can kill me, but you still can't have me. And
that's what we call boundaries, people.
And so I don't think it was her surrendering. I feel like it was kind of her surrendering to death in a way, but, like, I don't think it was her forgiving Rio at all. I think that it was more Agatha, like, if she's forgiving anyone, I feel like it was her forgiving herself.
Okay.
And but this is my problem with that scene, is that on paper it's good, like it's a good scene, it's still like slightly emotional, but the reason that scene doesn't work for me is because it makes no sense why Billy would be willing to kill himself for her. It makes perfect sense that she's willing to give Billy to death and live herself. But then it makes no sense that all it takes is one little line about your son and you're willing to suicide yourself. Like, betraying Billy is on brand, and but folding that easily and like killing yourself for Billy after he's just like, oh, is this how your son died? It felt very unearned to me. It did not feel, it felt very rushed. And yes, in the next episode, we find out like how Nicholas died, but it still just feels off to me. Like, I feel like that scene was so rushed and it really needed like more dialogue, like not necessarily more fighting, but it needed to be more in order to hit properly.
For sure. I give that. I'll give you that. I also think there should have been a line somewhere about how she came for Wanda's powers, but she stayed because she wanted to resurrect her son, like create the son that she saw Wanda do. And I feel like that was a great parallel that they it was right there and they just dropped it.
And I, sorry, Cam. I also think
Okay.
it's kind of interesting because there was that theory, like people have this theory that she turned to the Darkhold to resurrect her son. Like, I don't think Wanda turned to the Darkhold to resurrect her children. I think she turned to it to learn more about magic, and she was like, "Hey, I can have my children. Cool." But Jack Schaefer like rejects that. Like, she says in an interview that Agatha has no interest in resurrection or bringing her son back. Because of her relationship with death, she understands that it's final and she accepts that. And so she's not trying, like, bringing her son back is not a goal for her. And so I understand that as well. I like, you know, that characterization of like having that relationship with death that you know it's final. But I also feel like, yeah, you're missing out on so many parallels because if she wanted to bring her son back, it would be. I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of a mess to me because like they don't do enough with Agatha's character.
Well, let me ask you this, Cam. Do you feel like that maybe is like a poetic way to like connect the two of like, she obviously she didn't show up in WandaVision for the children. She didn't know that that was there. But then we have the parallels of for the children. She has the children. She resurrects them. She even Agatha even mentions at the end of the finale of like, you created children. Like, is this like a missed point, or do you feel like that's a it was okay for you?
I feel like I think I do like I think Agatha probably maybe did want to know, but I feel like when she got the when Agatha got the Darkhold, it was obviously for more power. Like I don't think then she wanted to resurrect her son, but I feel like when she, found out Wanda was around and that she created this whole massive new reality and she went to go inside, she then was like, oh, maybe because Agatha at the end of WandaVision wants Wanda's powers so she can make her own reality. And I imagine then that would have meant that she could have brought Nicholas back into her own reality, maybe somewhere that, Rio couldn't get to or something like that. But I don't think it's more because I think it was never really about like, Agatha all along is about, the show is being Agatha, like, all throughout history, like it's all everything's to do with her, like the road and everything. But at the end of it, you kind of see like a reluctantly become like the mentor to like obviously Billy and everything. Like maybe it's something she didn't get with her own son, like she probably wanted to teach him magic and like raise him in magic and stuff like that. So I think it's quite nice that in like I wouldn't say that she gets her own son because I mean her and Billy like still kind of hate each other, you know what I mean? But they do relate to each other because obviously at the end Billy, Agatha says, oh, she always ends up killing a coven, and then Billy says, oh, me too, and then that's when they walk off together. But I do feel like there's some kind of wouldn't you know, I think Agatha's learning too that she's getting what she wanted, and that's teaching someone else
Okay.
like her magic and like her powers and stuff, and like becoming sort of a mentor, which I feel like she probably wanted with Nicholas, and obviously she didn't get enough time to because Rio took her away and all of that kind of thing.
Okay. and looking forward, because again, we're running out of time, but looking forward, you know, we have a kind of a clear direction. Billy and Agatha are off to find Tommy. That was the essentialness of episode 8 leading into the last part of episode 9. Death just literally fucked off, and I think that obviously Death is coming back. And then we have Jennifer Kale, who flew off as well, looking like a goddamn queen. Love Jennifer Kale. But where do you see the MCU, especially in the queerness? Like, I feel like this is like the opening of our own witch's road. Our own gayness is coming out of here. Where's it go from here? Where do you want it to go from here?
Well, obviously, in terms of like queerness, I mean, you know, not most of the Young Avengers, quite a few of the Young Avengers are sort of queer or queer adjacent. So it'd be good to see where their projects can go and whether or not they can bring in the level of queerness that they did into Agatha. Because obviously we have to have Billy sort of break up with Eddie so he can get with Teddy and that kind of thing. So we need some of that in the MCU. But, you know, I just want more, basically. Now we've had that taste of what it feels like to genuinely have it in a show. You know, we need it in like a big Hollywood, you know, one of the big films next. We need like that kind of impact in terms of queerness. And then obviously would love to see more of Agatha and like her queerness. So wherever she shows up next, like I don't think she'll be in Vision Quest, because I don't think Jack Schaefer has anything to do with that. But whatever they do next, whether it's like a Wiccan show or like a Billy show or something, like, you know, if she's in that, I hope there's more of like her self and like her queerness. But yeah, I mean, just for like the MCU in general, we just need more now. now the queer witch's road has opened. Let's just send all the characters down there and see who makes it out to the end, basically.
Fuck, let's just make everybody gay. That's what I'm saying here. Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, you know, Captain America and Iron Man just need to make out a little bit.
If they're bringing back Robert Downey Jr. as a variant, like, make him gay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Doom kidnaps Scarlet Witch, not because he wants to marry her, but because he just wants to clean out with her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's mother. Yeah. He's just like, I recognize a fellow mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just wants a beard while he's, like, taking over the 100%. Multiverse.
Honestly, I'm a little bit more cynical. Like, just there's been so much talk of queer representation in the MCU that they haven't delivered on. Like, I firmly believe that Jack Schaefer only got away with this because she had the strength of WandaVision supporting her. Like, I think you can tell that she was given a lot of free rein on this show. Like, she was allowed to direct like a third of the show. She wrote the whole thing. Like, she's been handed like the keys to the kingdom for Agatha.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, I know she said like it was super important for her to have that queer representation. And I don't think we're going to see that continued throughout the MCU without someone like her on the creative side that's really pushing for it. And I don't think we're going to see any in the movies, because I think they're worried about a movie would definitely get more hate for it than something like Agatha. You know, like all of like the conservative groups that like boycotted Beauty and the Beast over this, right? It's like they don't care about Agatha all along. They don't even know what the hell that is. But if you try putting a gay person in an Avengers movie, you're going to hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that this might not like leak out into the rest of the MCU, but as long as these characters continue, like, I'm happy with it. Like, we finally have like true authentic queer representation in very well developed characters with Agatha and Billy, and so I hope that we see that continued wherever they pop up next, even if Jack Schaefer isn't the one writing them, but she better be the one writing them. And speaking of the future of those characters, I think they really need to reconsider the fact that Agatha is a limited series. Marvel designs most of their shows as a limited series. But I feel like Agatha all along, I feel like a season 2 of it would totally work. I also feel like people want a season 2 of it. I was just texting one of my friends last night. She was like, I'm so excited for season 2. And I'm like, there is no season 2. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, they set it up for a season 2. I'm like, this is the MCU. Like, you're going to get a Wiccan show in 5 years. And she's like, no, like, they need a season 2. And I kind of agree with that. Like, they're pretty equal now, Agatha and Billy. And so to continue the show under this name and have the two of them be the focus, I think would be a better idea than making a Wiccan show, but making half of it be about Agatha.
Yeah, you know? That's fair.
Yeah, and they could easily give it one of like those subtitles, like they could call it like Coven of Chaos or something like that. You know what I mean? So like for a subtitle, if right. they wanted that kind of thing.
Or even like, because I know that they want to do the Wiccan show based off of the Children's Crusade. So just make it Agatha All Along Children's Crusade.
Yeah.
Yeah, just start some, because some shows do that. Like they'll subtitle like seasons of the show. I think Gotham started doing that. Like
at yes.
So.
Or like American Horror Story. Every season has a different, it's American Horror Story yeah. and then it has its name.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's a better example.
So it could be like Agatha Hotel or something like that, you know.
Agatha Hotel.
just yeah.
But there's a few different Marvel shows that they could do this with, and they could just have different, like you could like Daredevil Born Again, but you could have any of the stories that you want to tell on a street level, you know. I think that's yeah, a good point.
I just think the important thing is like they need to not like wait years to do this stuff. I don't know. I saw people talking in the Discord about like a Moon Knight season 2 again. And I'm like, guys, the ship has fucking sailed. Moon Knight came out in 2022. You're not getting a season 2 of a show in like 2026. Like, I don't even care if Marvel is making it. If they are making it, I want to go tell them to stop, because it yeah. is just beyond ridiculous to say like, here's a 6-episode season 2 4 years after something came out. Like, they're already stretching it with Ahsoka and like Loki, in my opinion, with like 2-year gaps.
Yeah.
And so it's like, Moon Knight season 2 be great? Yeah, but like, you missed the boat. You don't have your shit together. Like, make a movie now. Make another show. Like,
I mean, something. in that defense, though, part of that was thrown off by the King stuff. So like, that is part of the reason why Moon Knight got a little bit delayed here.
I don't know. I feel like Marvel is in like such a messy place, because it's like, I feel like they've maybe lost confidence in themselves. Like I think the pivot away from Kang is disgusting. Like they should have recast.
Oh, that could be a whole other podcast for me. I could talk hours about this.
Like the way that Marvel has utterly killed my hype for Avengers 5 should be investigated. Like I couldn't care less about it now that it's Doctor Doom. I would still care about it a little bit if it was non Robert Downey Jr. Doctor Doom, but doing that has like completely turned me off the Avengers movies. And I'm sure I'll change my tune once we start seeing stuff from it. And if it looks good, you know, I'll be happy again. I'm sure I'll be excited. But like they've killed any interest that I have in that concept. And I feel like the loss of confidence is an issue with Agatha. I know we need to wrap up, but Jack Schaefer said that she didn't put Agatha and Rio's backstory in the show because she wasn't sure how people would respond to this pairing, to this characterization. And so it really sounds like she didn't want to like waste audiences' time with something that they might not care about. And so she kept the focus on Agatha and Nicholas. But to me, that's saying that you don't have confidence in your writing. You don't have confidence that you've created characters that people will love. Because once you got on set and you started seeing like the scenes between Aubrey and Catherine, you should have written that back into the show. And so to me, like to say that you didn't put it in the show because like you weren't sure how people would respond, to me, it's just kind of like, it's saying that you don't have confidence in your own work, that like you wouldn't put that in when it was needed for the emotion of the show.
And on that note, I think that is the perfect place to stop. So you can check us out on thecosmiccircus.com, or you can find us on Twitter or other social medias at My Cosmic Circus, or our Cosmic Circus Cosmic Circus Podcast Twitter at Cosmic Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in to Across the Queerverse. My name is Brian Kitson, and you can find me on Twitter at Kitson301. Cam Uday, it is always a pleasure. Can you let the people know where they can find you?
Yes, I'm on Twitter as Cam and Film, and then I also run Agatha H News, so you can get any Agatha news you want over there. So give that a follow if you don't already.
Thank you so much.
Turns out I do follow your Agatha account, okay. Cam. So I was like, that sounds familiar. I'm Uday. You can find me on all social medias at GoldenNinja3000.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And we will see you again across the Queerverse.